This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 120, Herding Cats.
Hello, and welcome yet again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin. I'm coming to you live from the four-cornered office that I am in at the moment in Research Triangle Park, and I'm very, very, very pleased to be joined by my co-founder and co-host, Mr. Michael Rowe.
Hey, hey, and if you haven't listened to this show before, we're going to welcome you for the first time.
And if you've if you've listened to the show plenty of times, we'll say welcome back.
And we can welcome yet again. Happy Friday, everybody. It has just been one crazy, crazy week. Yeah. It's been so crazy. It's been like, what's the term? Herding cats.
Herding cats. and that is H-E-R-D, not H-U-R-T, in case you were wondering.
That's hurting, not herding.
Well, you know, sometimes it's a little hard to hear D's and T's, but you do have a fantastic microphone.
Why, thank you very much.
Yeah, of course, dulcet tones. So Michael found, and he doesn't know exactly where, this game.
I don't know where I found it, but it is just awesome.
Yeah, so tell our visual, non-visual audience, because this is a podcast, how Herding Cats works.
So Herding Cats is all about herding cats.
But they want to be herded, don't they? I mean, yeah, this is an interesting game.
It's a great little game. It's from a site called Puzzle Script, and it's all these 8-bit games that remind me a lot of games from back in the day. And the herding cat games is you have these cats that want to be herded, and you have a little square guy, and he's not completely square, and you walk around, and you whichever side of you touches a cat will then capture that cat, and as other cats touch either you or one of the sides of one of the cats you've already touched, they will connect up. Kind of like Snake. And from that perspective, they will then... you try to get all the cats that are on the screen.
Right.
And so if you're herding the cats, you want to get all the cats. And after you've gotten all the cats, you succeed that level. So the basic idea is to herd all the cats.
And that's exactly it. What I'm trying to do right now, and I've managed to herd a bunch of them, but not all of them.
And you would think, oh, it's not that hard, except...
But it is.
It is. Because the room, there's multiple shapes of rooms, and then every once in a while, they'll put something in the middle of a room just to mess with you. So it's actually really fun, and what's really cool about it is on every... screen, they have an option to hack the game, which actually allows you to go in and go to a GitHub repository of code and go in and change the game yourself. So it's really kind of cool that way. So if you want to play and you want to and you're into the whole 8-bit world, which I don't know anybody on, you know, who listens to this show who would be into that, right?
Oh, baby, yes.
Yes?
I just solved another
was it a hard
level.
One?
It was a hard level, yeah. It was the one I pinged you earlier.
Oh, cool. So actually, if you go to the bottom of the page, there's actually other games. So there's one called You're Pulling My Leg. Where you basically, it's another puzzle game, and you use it to move things around and try to get around a kind of Dig Dug type environment. So.
Oh, you gotta love it. I solved it.
Yay. So given how crazy everything has been lately, you know, Herding Cats has just been an ideal metaphor for my days lately.
I think it's been an ideal metaphor for everybody's days. As folks are getting ready to see the end of summer, people coming back from vacation need to get a lot of things done and quickly. You know, this is where work really is starting to heat up, if you will. And yes. Speaking of heating up, one of the things that came across my feed this week was something really interesting from Google. They have a new facility called Project Sunroof. And yes. The way Project Sunroof works is that it only works at the moment in San Francisco and in Boston. So
yeah, and I was really disappointed by that.
Well, you can sign up and say, hey, when you get here to North Carolina, please let me know.
I did.
Yeah, but I suspected that you might. The way that works is that it's using Google Maps and the visualization from overhead, so the roof line of all the houses in neighborhoods in these two cities for the moment. And you can enter an address, and it will tell you for that particular address, based on the roof, based on the positioning of the sun and the tree structure when the Google Maps photos were taken from overhead, how much of your available roof you could deploy solar power on, and what your anticipated savings might be depending on what option you select for deploying solar or on your roof, whether you lease it or whatever.
Well, what's really interesting is there must be another company that's using something very similar to this, because recently we got in the mail I won't mention the name of the company yet, but it's a company that is trying to deploy solar panels on roofs for very inexpensive entry point. Years and years ago, we were doing a lot of construction on our home, and we asked the contractor, hey, do you do solar panels? He goes, yeah, I used to do them, but they're really expensive, and your house wouldn't work. And that was the end of the conversation. I really wish we had pushed hard back then to get them on the roof. So now I've been going back and looking at getting solar panels on the roof because I have too many computers in the house. and the electric bill is showing that every once in a while. So solar panels would be really cool, and especially where you can sell the power back to the grid. And given the storms and things that we have with hurricanes and
lightning
storms and stuff, yeah. And lightning,
yep.
You know, it'd be nice to be able to have power when the grid goes down. So we got this thing in this mail from this company that's trying to do inexpensive solar panel deployments. And what they've done is they're basically allowing customers to lease the panels in kind of a lease to own type environment.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, wow, that's a really good idea. It'd be like a really low entry point. You know, we plan on staying in the house for some time, so it'd probably be able to pay it off quite nicely, etc. And then I looked at the fine print, and they're like, however, these panels will, you know, feed back into the grid. I'm like, well, that's cool. But when the power goes out on the grid, you won't have power. And my reaction was, what? What do you mean? That kind of defeats the whole purpose.
Well, but it's a subsidy, right?
Basically, what they've done is they've struck up a strategic partnership with various power generators in various states around the country, and they're allowing them to get the benefit of green energy feeds back into the grid. And they're charging you the benefit of allowing that to happen. And, of course, most estimates that they show is they will pay for themselves almost within the first year, and your energy cost will go down dramatically, right? So the average consumer is going to say, hey, this is great if you just want lower electric bills. But I don't want just lower electric bills. I want electricity when the power's out.
So you'd have to buy a generator.
Yep.
You can buy a solar generator.
Which they won't allow me to connect to their system because they own the system and lease it to you.
Ah.
So
you'd have to
go
have
back
a
to,
separate generator. You'd
have to
diesel
have a
power
set of,
Caterpillar generator.
Yeah, or there. I'd have to have my own set of solar panels that I pay full price for up front and not use their service. So kind of a bummer.
Well, something to think about.
But no, I do like this webpage, and you're absolutely right. I tried it as soon as I saw the link come across TechCrunch this week, and saw that, yeah, except for my area, which means I don't live in Boston or San Francisco. but I think this is really, really cool, especially as, you know, one of the deciding factors, you know, 10 plus years ago was the direction of my roof line. I was told that you wanted to have a certain percentage
southern
of your
facing.
Yes, a certain percent of your roof south facing.
Yeah.
And it would not be economically feasible back then. However, with solar cells becoming much more efficient and much more capable of capturing energy from the sun, et cetera, I really want to relook at the problem and see, you know, how effective it would be to get solar panels on the roof. So I hope they very quickly expand to other locations. I think it's exciting.
So do you remember the time when we were collaborating on how to increase the efficiency of solar cells?
Yes. Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like Chris Farley. It's like, you remember when you were in that band, the Beatles? That was cool, wasn't it?
Except we weren't in the Beatles.
Remember when we were coming up with new ways of solar panels?
That was cool.
That was cool. That was really cool.
So, you know, as long as we're trying to save the world from a power standpoint, we may as well also turn our attention to saving water. And another feed, or another item that came across my feed recently, and this is not the first time it did, was the Nebbia, I think is how you pronounce it, showerhead.
Nebbia.
And
yes, this looks
is a Kickstarter,
really cool.
Right?
Yes.
For the low price of, I think now you can get in for $299, I think it's.
Yeah, the 249s are all gone, the 269s are all gone, the 279s are all gone.
Yeah. So
the 299s are there, and there's a couple of the 500s that are all gone.
Yeah, because those are the people who wanted to buy multiple. So here's the deal. The shower head is a redesigned water delivery mechanism, taking fluid dynamics lessons from aircraft engine technology and how air and moisture pass through aircraft engines, and has applied it to delivering water. And according to the backers and to the founders of this particular environment, this is a better way of getting water, not wasting water that will fly all over the place in the shower, but really direct it on to you trying to get yourself clean. And the wacky bit is it's a 70, that's a 70% water savings over traditional shower heads.
Which is just freaking awesome.
Yeah.
But I you know, what I do to save water when I shower is I cook in the shower and I wash my clothes at the same time.
Okay.
You want some soup?
Too much? Didn't know. Didn't want to know.
You ought to try my coffee.
Oh.
No. This is really cool. It's interesting because, you know, at our favorite coffee place, Bean Traders, we were hanging out the other day, and one of the other regulars at the coffee shop actually showed me this exact same Kickstarter. So
no
it's,
way.
It's making its way. It's making its way around the day.
Yep. So you have the Nebbia sensation. You're wondering, yes, it does rinse your hair. So, but I, what I loved was the video.
The question that I would need to know, I mean, before I spent $300 on a shower head,
yeah,
is does it have the water pressure, right? Really strong water pressure.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Yeah. And that's the key thing, right? You know, I like the good water pressure. We don't have at home a superior water pressure like I've had in other places that I've lived or in various hotels and stuff. It's okay. It's not great. But yeah. This one here is, from the video, it seems like you would actually get, some significant, delivery to where you want it to go on your head and back and everywhere else. And I love the example of what they were showing about a regular shower versus the Nebbia shower, a comparison on the fish tanks to just kind of give you, this is how they calculated that's 70% reduced. So, and we've got washers in ours too, to help them have fewer gallons per minute, but 2 gallons per minute, still a lot of water that flows through.
Yeah. Yeah.
And 13 times more thermally efficient. So,
so that means you shouldn't have to have as big a hot water tank.
Yeah.
Because if it stays thermally efficient, right?
Well, that would probably be the case, especially for people who have the hot water heaters, the inline hot water heaters versus the tank design.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that, and we made that mistake when we had a problem some years back, and I didn't get the inline one. I just had the tank, which was a replacement of what we had, and I really wish I had switched to the inline. It's much more efficient again.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So I will have to take a solid, serious look at this, and this could be pretty interesting possibility, but it's not cheap, right?
Yes.
Not cheap.
Yes.
But could be fantastic.
It would be fantastically cheap. No. Not at $300. This is the challenge, right? I mean, I love the idea. I think the design is kind of cool looking.
Yeah.
What
would it take to have you hit that, yeah, I'm going to back it?
Yeah, that's just it. I think I want solar panels before I want a better shower head. You know?
Yeah.
I do. It does look like it has kind of... I haven't been able to watch the whole video through. Does it have both the shower head and the handled shower head thing? It looks like that in the one.
Yeah, picture.
Is that the default?
Yep.
Cool.
So spring because of 2016. Because that's how
you reduce water usage with that too, right? Because that allows you to rinse off closer, like on your arms and stuff.
Yeah.
So. So how can you game that? Right now, it's called Kickstarter.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. There are some that are going through Kickstarter as just another delivery channel for selling things. The fantastic bit here, though, that at least that I saw was they were looking for $100,000.
Yeah, yeah,
and they're up to $2.3 million.
Well, that's what's really cool is when you see one of these kind of innovative ideas on Kickstarter that literally just blows up like that, right?
Yep.
Where they have a very reasonable target, they just want to prove that they can make the product. They think it's a good idea. They want to find a couple of people who might think it's a good idea. They build out their design and everything to say, if we do this right, we'll make our people happy. We'll make it within a reasonable time frame, and speaking of that, and we'll be successful. And then you see it, blow up like this with 2 million something investments. And it's interesting. So the other day I was on Kickstarter, and I got a survey.
Oh, did you?
Have you gotten a survey on Kickstarter yet?
I don't think I have.
Like from Kickstarter?
If I have, I've ignored it. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting. It's the first time I've gotten one. And there's this one Kickstarter that I supported. It was like the very first one I've supported. So this was 3, maybe 4 years ago. And they have yet to deliver. Okay?
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of just negativity in the comments and everything. And it's a movie. It's a documentary for a band that I really, really like. It's the Authorized documentary. During the time period that the Kickstarter closed and before it was supposed to be first delivered, one band member died. Since then, another band member has died. And
it's going to be kind of hard to make a movie if they're all dying.
Well, they have all the footage.
Oh, okay. Right? Well, that's good.
The owner of the Kickstarter has been working with the remaining members of the band to get it approved, because it's an authorized movie, right?
Yeah.
About the band. And they're not very communicative. And so there have been long stretches with no feedback to the backers, et cetera. And it's been frustrating, to say the least. And every once in a while, I'll drop the guy just a note. I'm like, dude, I know this is frustrating for you, because he's like having creative differences now with the members of the band.
Ooh, uh-huh.
And it's an authorized documentary.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, you have a vision and creative people doing something about other creative people, and you've given them authorization of it. It's going to be a problem. So just, you know, keep us informed with what's going on. That's all I ask. Every once in a while, I'll drop a note, kind of that effect. And it's not going well. So I go on Kickstarter the other day, and I actually get a survey, and it's a quote unquote generic survey,
right?
Sponsored between Kickstarter and it's either MIT or Stanford or one of the other universities in that kind of level of engineering, technology, innovation type space, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it goes, thinking about the Kickstarter called, fill in the name of this one.
Right.
And it's very targeted at that specific Kickstarter. And it's asking questions about value, timeliness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm wondering if the Kickstarter guys have been looking at the feedback and finally going, because, I mean, there are people in this thread saying, we ought to sue, you misrepresented. And my take is, Kickstarter is not a purchase. It's backing of an investment, and it can go good and it can go bad, right? So as long as you're communicating, we see progress. But it was really, really interesting to see that that survey kick in and have it very specific to that Kickstarter. Because I've had other ones that have not delivered yet either, that have, you know, they're 6 months or a year behind, right?
Right. Right.
But this one is years and years behind. So have you had any experience with a Kickstarter that has been slow to deliver?
Yeah, well, I mean,
and not deliver?
Well, I mean, this, by definition, that would be the case, right? You know, yeah. If they haven't delivered yet, then they haven't delivered. So I recognize that some of these take time and there are setbacks. And even for ones that are wildly successful and funded and backed by lots of people, they just take some time, you know? So yeah. That's okay. I can wait.
So from your specific experience, though, you've had those, right?
Yeah, I have.
Okay,
sure.
Okay. Yeah, because I, you know, my recommendation to the guy was like, you know, can't you, you know, get some buzz going that maybe help you in your negotiations with the band by actually putting out some of the things, like the T-shirt, right? There was a T-shirt for the movie as part of one of the levels, mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
you know, something that shows that you are actively still working on this.
Yeah, well, I mean,
and the poor guy, let's face it, the guy didn't ask enough. I mean, he double achieved his original request.
Right.
But it wasn't enough, if you ask me.
Yeah.
So.
He probably just didn't gauge how much he really needed. That was part of the problem, right?
Don't know. But anyway, so it's interesting to see how the gamification of crowdfunding, mm-hmm. if you want to call it that, can lead to an expectation when so many of the Kickstarters that a lot of people engage in really become like Pebble, right?
Yeah.
Or the OBD2 plug that I did. Or even the shower one, if you look at it, they're kind of gaming pricing.
Sure.
Trying to figure out, and a lot of them will add new things in. Like, you know, another one I supported recently was the solar sail, which I have been supporting for 10 plus years mm-hmm. through the Planetary Society.
Yeah.
And they decided right before the launch to do a Kickstarter around it to get awareness, et cetera. And they were constantly adding in additional rewards, even as they got, you know, well beyond what they asked for, right? As a way of kind of just continually ratcheting up engagement with the brand or the activity. And none of it anymore was about that solar sale. That solar sail was in space by then.
Yeah, right. So. Well, but you've got to do some things to kind of keep your interest rolling. And I think one of the nice things about Kickstarter is it's done a fabulous job of highlighting new capabilities, new technologies that people can kind of jump into, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there's one other item that I saw that I shared on Twitter with the Games at Work account that, because of the interest of my kids around Minecraft, and my daughter today was building a horse farm where she had pasture lands and trees that she was raising. And she had created this one run of where you could time how fast the horse would go. And it was just this long fenced in straight path. You could do that. And then how high the horses could jump. And she was like, can they jump one block, 1.5 blocks, 2 blocks? So it was kind of cool how she put this all together. I do stay tuned to Minecraft kinds of things, and the game band is the game band is kind of funny. It's very much like the fuel band. Yep. And it allows you to take your Minecraft worlds with you. So it's basically like a USB key
worlds
or something
on your wrist.
Yeah, you can take your world with you and kind of put it other places.
So you know, I've been following Minecraft, but I've never actually played it or done anything with it. So you're telling me.
I'm telling you.
You're telling me that I can take my world with me and put it on my wrist and plug it in somewhere else and keep playing it?
That's kind of the way I'm taking it. But
does it come with a bamboo steamer?
It doesn't.
How much would you pay?
It doesn't come. I mean, the article from Wired kind of moans that it doesn't come with a license to play Minecraft, which, it's like, okay, you really probably don't need to do that, because if you're going to buy one of these things, you probably already have a license to play Minecraft. But it does have a cloud backup strategy with it. So if you're spending a lot of time in building your worlds and universe and so on and so forth, you kind of don't want them to disappear. So it's neat that you have that ability to save it up into a cloud source that comes with this as a service. And you've got the ability to show your special Minecraft love with redstone blocks and other things right there on your wrist. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I do think it's kind of cool. I mean, the idea that, you know, what was it, Tamagotchi?
Yeah.
Right? You could carry your little pets with you on a keyring. Now you can take the whole world in a world on my wrist.
In a world
where blocks have taken over, you can carry it on your wrist. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
And I guess the question, can you do any type of interaction with the world while it's on your wrist? Or is it just a USB with a little bit of data that it feeds out to a display?
I think it's just a little data that's feeding out to that display. I don't think there's really, you know, other fun, interesting stuff that it does. Other than to store the world and kind of display to your admiring crowds that you've got another piece of Minecraft tchotchke. So I don't think it does much more than that based on what I've read here so far. But it doesn't really need to. I mean, most of the people who are really, really into Minecraft are in their worlds almost all the time anyway, and they probably have places they can get to their worlds wherever they need to be. And then you can have people, you know, host it on a server, and they can come in and enjoy and be part of your world too, which is kind of cool. And and that's what my kids are doing too. So they've created a local area network hosted, supported world, so it's not accessible to the, you know, wide realm of people out in the internets, and they can just
in a world in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, they do their own thing, and it's really fun. I mean, they've built roller coasters, and they've built, you know, secret tunnels and special rooms and lava looking doorways that are sheets of lava. I mean, it's very clever stuff. And with all the redstone, you're able to do a fair amount of it's essentially electrical engineering. I mean, you can wire up a computer, you can wire up a whole bunch of different things, if and or not kind of logic that will illuminate the redstone blocks in one direction or another, and then create something new to happen if you trigger a switch or if you step on a pressure plate or something like that. So it's really, 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 really clever. And I'm so eager to see where Microsoft takes this next, because this was a big investment for them. And they have an amazingly large population of people in the world constructing and building. It's, you know, it's not a game with a end purpose. I mean, you can go and slay the Ender Dragon. There are some of that in the game that you could try to do, but it's not just a game. It's a building space. And as such, the creativity that comes out of it is just mind-boggling.
Very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are the things that we have for this week. So pretty darn interesting lineup of new tech and old tech and changing tech and one or the other. I'm wondering, Michael, are you playing anything new this week that you didn't share with us from the last time?
Yeah, I am playing a new game. It's not really, really new, but it's Angry Birds 2.
Ooh.
Which is different than Angry Birds and Angry Birds Seasons and Angry Birds in Space and Angry Birds Star Wars and Angry Birds Star Wars 2 and Angry Piggies and Pygmalion and other angry shows. But Angry Birds 2 has been out, I guess, a couple of weeks now.
Yep.
And it's... They've combined the mechanics of Angry Birds and a card-playing game.
Okay.
Okay. And so what you do is you have your little bird who gets angry, and you play. No. On each level, you always try to get to three, right? And instead of having just a simple space for a level, you have a target that you go after.
Right.
So in this one, I'm on level 29. I have the traditional just little red Angry Bird, except he uses the mechanic that the Obi-Wan bird from Star Wars uses, where you tap and he kind of pushes.
Uh-huh.
And I have a set of two things on the screen covered with pigs and little TNT and some fans, kind of like the space one, which will move me around. And if I blow this one up, I have three other scenes to go through. And so I start with three cards, and the three scenes, I will get a new card if I destroy enough things to clear part of the level. And so there's like a destruction meter. And I can choose... Each bird is represented by a card, so I can say, okay, I don't want that card. I want to try this other card now and switch birds. I can also get things that... So I just cleared it. I got an extra card, and this card is now a spell, which allows me to turn a hot pepper into the space, which will cause the little piggies to burst into flames and explode. So the mechanic is really bizarre what they've done to their game, because they still have the, you know, destroy things, use the environment and the physics, but they've added a lot more to it. It's kind of hard to explain without you seeing it.
Okay, well, that might be worth looking at.
Yeah, it might be. So.
Might be.
Huh. So that's what I've been playing lately, and it's kind of funky.
Well, I've been playing a little bit of the Lego Star Wars combined thing. It's kind of polishing up some of the earlier episodes that I hadn't been working on for a while. So that's been fun to do too. I like, you know, flying around in the Millennium Falcon and, you know, taking out the Death Star and stuff like that. So that's pretty good. And I've recently, I mean, like this morning, updated Swarm, which has a new game in it.
I saw that. There's coins related in there somehow.
Coins.
Now.
Yes, coins. Ka-ching. So it's a little difficult to know yet what this is really going to do.
Maybe they're premium currency.
They could be. Maybe you can exchange them for Bitcoin. Who knows?
Maybe not.
Could be anything. Could be anything. So, look at that. I'm looking for messages, and it says no new messages, and has a little envelope crying because there's no new messages. But, cute. So I've got some coins now, and I'm happy because in my friend leaderboard, I am number one, which is great. But,
number one in coins?
Number one
in coins. Or just you're number one anyway.
Well, I mean, that's pretty easy, you know, to say, but,
Well, I can be feeling like number two.
Well, on my list, that's where you are right now, Michael.
Why, thank you.
So we'll see how the coins things works.
I saw that. I didn't spend enough ergs of energy to say, and what does that mean? Right? So it'll be cool. I look forward to figuring out what's going on.
Yeah,
with that.
And as I talk about it right now, I'm looking at the leaderboard, and guess what? It ain't working. So, there we go. Now, there we go. 43 coins.
Ooh, you are coin-topulous.
I am coin-topulous. And, I can go and taunt people. Isn't that fun?
You can taunt people?
Yeah, there's a button to taunt.
Will you taunt them a second time?
I'm going to go taunt Kirk. This is a taunt. While you are on vacation.
And if you don't do it, I will taunt you a second time.
Yes, exactly.
Very cool. Very nice. Very cool. So what else is going on in the world of games?
Yeah,
nothing else.
We want to hear from you. We want to hear, what are you playing? What are you seeing? Where's the technology heading? How's the gamification really being pervasive in your business, the things that you do, the way that you operate? We want to know. Inquiring minds want to know.
We do want to know. And then we'll tell two friends, and they'll tell two friends, and so on and so on. Well, that's the show, everybody. We do want your feedback. We look forward to it every week when we get it. And we'll be back with a new show soon. Maybe even next week.
You never know. Could be.
See ya.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network. And we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.